Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. Right there is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright, and it was a very, very interesting night for the Warriors. We have a lot to discuss. Tim Howard is here to break down the World Cup, so we'll talk soccer, and then we'll have Dwight Howard here, not related, to break down the finals. And that's where we will start, with a bittersweet win for the Golden State Warriors. Sure, they got the win, but this was tough to watch after missing over a month with a strained calf. Kevin Durant made his long-awaited return last night. The Warriors needed him. They sat on the brink of elimination. But his return was short-lived. Second quarter, scored 11 points in 12 minutes. He was hot. And then he was not. Re-injuring his leg, had to be helped off the court by his teammates. Kevin Durant would leave the arena on crutches before the game ended with what is reportedly believed to be a torn Achilles. After the game, Durant took to Instagram with this post: Dub Nation, going to be loud as bleep for game six. I'm hurting deep in the soul right now. I can't lie, but seeing my brothers get this win was like taking a shot at tequila. I got new life, LOL. Hashtag dubs. After the game, a very emotional Bob Myers on the decision to let Kevin Durant play.
He was cleared to play tonight. That was a collaborative decision. I don't believe there's anybody to blame, but I understand this world, and if you have to, you can blame me. I run our basketball operations department, and let me tell you something about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant loves to play basketball, and the people that questioned whether he wanted to get back to this team were wrong. And I'm not here to... He's one of the most misunderstood people. He's a good teammate. He's a good person. It's not fair.
It's not about basketball. It's about everything else. The shit that y'all don't care about.
What do you think about the people who questioned Katie's heart and how long it was taking him to return?
No one knows more than Boogie Cousins what that feels like to have to leave basketball before the season is over. See, I'll start with you. How devastating is Kevin Durant's injury?
Oh, it's an awful injury. It's an awful injury. And anytime you see an elite athlete, because injuries are a part of sport, but they're the thing as far as a career that an athlete is the variable they don't have control over. That, where they're going to play, most of the time they don't have control over those things. Kevin Durant tried. He tried to give it the type of effort, and typically in sports, as an athlete, you feel the pressure to compete. You feel the pressure not let your teammates down. And also, you feel the pressure of greatness. And that is, even though I might not be 100%, I'm going to try it. And that's where great performances, that's where we get them from. With a decision just like last night. The medical staff, they said he was cleared to play. Kevin Durant and his teammates needed him. So Kevin Durant tried to put himself out there. But for every athlete who was watching that last night, I hope they learned one thing from it. And that's listen to your body. Because your body won't lie to you. You can only listen to the doctor so far. You can only listen to the training staff, listen to the coaches, and you definitely can't listen to your teammates. Because if you listen to them, they're not feeling your body, and they'll have you out there playing. That's why any type of teammates that I have, I never encourage guys if they were injured. Man, I tell them, know your body, man. Know your body. Whatever's going to happen after, you're supposed to be out there, you'll be out there. Now, once you're in the game and someone gets dinged or injured during the game, that's different. Then you try to tell the guy to suck it up, man. We need you. We like to have you out there. But this is totally different. And this was a prime example of a guy ignoring the signs of his body, gave him the warning signs. He ran through those a couple days ago before Friday's game. He worked out. Jalen Rose said it. I saw he had a private workout. It didn't go well. His body gave him a warning. And now it's amazing that the doctors because they're down 3-1, then they cleared him before game 5. It's amazing how doctors and the timing of games and season, how you get cleared. NFL guy blows out his knee. When does he get cleared? Cleared about Labor Day. That's when the season's getting ready to start. So for me, unfortunate for Kevin Durant. I do understand what he was trying to go through, because the bond that you have with your teammates, that I will push myself beyond what I can do for each other, that's why we play sports. And last night, Kevin Durant didn't get a fair share for what he tried to accomplish. And the pressure of trying to get back out there in the NBA Finals. Oh, man, I could understand. Two-time defending MVP? Absolutely. Still trying to fight for respect at this point in his life. Still trying to fight for respect. That's why Kevin Durant was out there last night. I've always loved Kevin Durant as a basketball player. And last night, he earned even more respect. Because he jeopardized his whole career for them guys.
And
the worst injury a basketball player can suffer is a torn Achilles. And now he either has a torn Achilles or a severely strained Achilles.
And he had already more than held up his end of the bargain with this franchise and this organization. Whatever his plans were, and we've obviously speculated enormously on that for this summer, when he agreed to come over and play with them, the off-court stuff aside, he has been, during the NBA Finals, their best guy in consecutive years. He has shown up to work. On the court, he's done everything his teammates have asked of him, his coaches have asked of him. And yet, despite that, and I wonder who these people are, and I wonder if Kevin Durant has an idea of who these people are. Who was whispering in Tim Kawakami's ear that led Tim to write, if Clay or Looney or Curry or Green or Andre Iguodala had this injury 30 days ago, would the Warriors still be waiting for them? Because that wasn't Tim. Who was talking to Sam Amick, who he said sources that said, quote, there's confusion, angst, and, quote, a question about pushing through the way Clay, Boogie, Iguodala, and Looney have. That frustration and irritation were growing, according to Sam's report, in the locker room or in the organization, that KD wasn't out there. If I heard that, KD heard that.
Of course.
And KD then, they're on the brink of elimination. He goes out there and tries to give it his best shot, knowing if I don't go out there and we lose, people will forever question, could I have gone out there? If I don't go out there and they come back from a 3-1 deficit and win, people are going to forever question, how much did they ever really need me?
It felt like a lose-lose situation for
right,
Kevin Durant.
Now I'm in a spot where there are people close to the team reporting that some people in this locker room wonder if I'm dogging it. So he went out there and for 12 minutes of the first 14 played, even though Kerr said it was going to be short bursts. Those weren't no short bursts. The only short burst was his time on the bench. For those 12 minutes, he was best player on the court. And now, a guy who, Chris, you said you had heard he wants to play till he's 40. A guy who people have realistically said could become the NBA's all-time leading scorer. Now he's going to almost assuredly miss a full season of basketball and have his career potentially forever altered by this fork in the road moment.
There were a lot of people that had their hand in the proverbial cookie jar, if you will, in making this decision between, I'm sure, Myers you saw and the training staff and Steve Kerr and the people around KD and Kevin Durant himself. Do you blame the Warriors for what happened to Kevin Durant? Is there any blame that you can place on anyone?
Sports teams are going to do what they do, and that's try to win games, and they're going to push the product out there. They don't care anything about the athlete. Bob Myers, he was crying last night. But typically, they don't. This is what they do. They push the athlete to be on the court or on the field. It happens all the time in sports. And they should assume some of the blame. Absolutely. Because Kevin Durant hadn't been through a full NBA practice. Now, I know he might have been cleared for physical contact. He might have been cleared to practice. But he didn't make it through an NBA practice. He shouldn't have been playing the NBA Finals without being cleared, without going through that protocol. So what ends up happening, because you don't have time on your side, you take the shortcuts. Oh, man, he'll play with some of the backup guys. Oh, he'll play with some of the coaches. He'll play 2-on-2, 3-on-3. Had Kevin Durant participated in a full NBA practice before last night's game? No. And there is no doctor that would say, that's the way I'm going to bring him back into competition. And let alone, it is the most intense competition that he's ever been involved in his career.
And bring him back, see, it with what they said before the game was no minutes restrictions. No, I mean, and before the game.
I don't believe that. I believe they just made that up.
Okay, well, that's, I'm just saying.
When you haven't been through a practice, it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make common sense. People say a lot of things to get through that conversation.
Sure.
But there's no way Kevin Durant wouldn't have a minutes restriction. He didn't make it through 12 minutes.
Well, and so, and that's the, during, before the game, they said there wasn't going to be a minutes restriction. But what they did say was he was going to play in short bursts. Instead of, in the first 14 minutes, he played as much as anybody. I mean, he played 12 of the first 14 minutes before what looks like his Achilles popped on him. This is, as far as who deserves blame, I circle back to what I said. I really want to know what we read as external pressure.
Or if that was true. Because you, with you saying that, you're saying that Tim and them, what they were reporting was true. So we've been reporting a lot of things coming out of Golden State. So to me, the pressure for players to play is always there. No Tim releasing a story. That doesn't put any more pressure on us because people say things. I'm not going to validate it because I haven't seen an elite athlete who didn't want to be out there compared to what they were saying about KD.
No, but we talked about yesterday whether or not there would be either people in the locker room or people around the people in the locker room saying, why isn't he there? And even if we take Tim's column aside, Sam Amick, I mean, he has quotes from sources, and I trust Sam Amick on this. Though, if that's what the external pressure was, what was being said behind the scenes to KD that didn't get out there that maybe made him feel more pressure? I've got to play, the season's on the line. And now we might not see Kevin Durant play basketball again for 12 months.
But no one can have an influence on a player. His body is his moneymaker. No one can make a player go out there. Kevin Durant is too experienced. He's been in this league too long. He is too good for us to say, oh, some rumor forced him. No, the greatest athletes also have the greatest drive. Michael Jordan, flu conditions, temperature. He shouldn't have been playing that game in Utah. But that great performance, because he was able to get through it, we were able to see it. So Kevin Durant, you can't be forced out there by some rumor. Kevin Durant is too sophisticated, too smart for that. He loves basketball, and that's what got him out there yesterday. That's my biggest problem is listen to your body. And his body was telling him everything but be in that competition last night. He went through that stop sign that was right there for him, and he ended up getting injured.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Back to game five now. Kevin Durant made his return, but it was short-lived. Second quarter, after scoring 11 points, he pulls up with what is reportedly believed to be a torn Achilles. He would have to leave the arena on crutches. How do the Warriors do without him? Let's get back to the game. Less than a minute and a half to go. Warriors found themselves down three. Steph Curry to tie three of his 31 on the night. Next possession, Klay Thompson will finish off with the beautiful ball movement from deep. And he finished with 26 in this one. Final possession. Ooh. Warriors up one. Kawhi giving up the ball. It ends up with Kyle Lowry, who cannot connect. Warriors survive this one, 106-105. They still trail in the series 3-2. Here's Draymond Green after the game talking about the loss of Kevin Durant.
You could just kind of feel the life just go right out of us. But to Steph's credit, you know, he kind of rallied the troops and, you know, talked to everybody, went around the huddle and just, you know, told everybody to stay locked in and do this for Kevin, you know. And I think we did a good job of, you know, coming together and leaning on each other.
All right, Nick, how did the Warriors do it? They saw what happened to Kevin Durant in the second quarter and still managed to get themselves up, rallied, and win this game.
Well, in the moments after Kevin Durant's injury, they actually went on a little mini run. And Boogie Cousins, who had been told before the game, for the first time in his career, he was going to get a DNP coach's decision. And you saw him on the bench. We didn't know at the time he had been told that, but you saw on the bench he was a little sullen and despondent when it was Looney had been in the game, Bogut had been in the game, and then you knew it might not be Boogie Cousins' night. Once KD went down, Boogie Cousins all of a sudden becomes an important part of the game. Then Kevon Looney goes down, and Boogie gives you good minutes. The first really good minutes he's given you since game two. And then late in the game, the Warriors stayed in it with three-point shot making throughout. 7 threes in the first quarter, 20 overall threes in the game. But then late in the game, after a very odd Nick Nurse timeout when the Raptors seemed to be taking full control of the game, the Warriors, Steph and Klay, took turns hitting threes. They had great offensive possessions in the final 3 minutes, while the Raptors had terrible offensive possessions in the final 3 minutes. And despite Steph and Klay being the only two real threats on the court, they got good looks. The only wide-open look was the one we showed for Klay to take the lead. But that's a great look for Steph Curry. The one before was a good look for Klay Thompson, and that's a great look for Klay Thompson. And so they had their season totally on the brink in those final 3 minutes with Kawhi on fire. It felt like the momentum was sapped from the Raptors when they called a timeout, stopping their own run, and the Warriors took full advantage of it.
A couple things very, very important. Athletes from growing up, they are used to other athletes getting injured. So even with the story, with the plot with KD, is he going to be a free agent, him forcing himself back, athletes have the unbelievable ability to be able to focus because they see it more than other people see it. So they're able to recover in real time. Now, they were fortunate enough that because Steph and Iggy went into the locker room, they knew immediately that his Achilles. And when he fell onto the court and he began to pinch his Achilles, that's one of the signs. He didn't grab his calf. But people showed a lot of photos of the trauma, the shock once the tendon was either ruptured or strained. You could see the trauma come up into the calf, but the attachment point is right there at the bottom of that heel. And that's where he grabbed initially. So athletes have that unbelievable ability because they see it. You know, a guy gets injured on a football field, the coaches, training staff will deal with him. The coaches move you over to the next field and you will be playing while another guy has a serious injury. So you just get kind of used to that part. Now, as far as Boogie Cousins and what he was able to do, that was a tremendous effort from a mental standpoint because you have a championship game. He's ready to make a contribution. He's told that he's not. And then he's forced into the lineup because they have to play him because he's the best offensive weapon of all the centers, even though the coach had told him he's not going to play. So for me, the Warriors at the end, they executed their offense better and they got one more stop. Let's not think this was no 20-point blowout. No. This was a one-point game, a game of inches, a game of he makes a shot, he misses a shot. Draymond gets a deflection, so we don't know. Lowry said it felt good leaving his hand. But as far as Nick Nurse, my last point before I move on, a lot of NBA coaches in this same situation, they had scored 10 straight points. But in the NBA last year, they changed the rule. Once you get into the last 3 minutes of the game, you only get two timeouts,
yep.
So you lose all the additional timeouts. So a lot of NBA coaches, since last year, right before that three-minute mark, instead of losing it, they give their guys a break right there. So Nick Nurse, if you look at the coaching philosophy, what's been happening, and you can look, the Raptors were gassed. Kawhi was gassed.
Lowry asked for the timeout.
Yeah, you could see a little confusion because Kawhi didn't know if he was going to be on the attack. Lowry was trying to stop them. So for Nick Nurse, not trying to make an excuse, but this was a rule change last year, and coaches tried to take advantage of that, and I believe that's why he called the timeout, besides the obvious,
right.
His guys were dragging.
And once you call that one, because it's the use it or lose it timeout, basically what they call it, he actually called consecutive timeouts. He had four with 3 minutes left. He used them both in that same huddle. But the Warriors were in an odd spot because they had led for 41 of the first 42 minutes of this game, yet with 5.5 minutes left, they were down to just one timeout. See, after the Norman Powell dunk, where it seemed like everyone stopped playing defense, Kerr called his second-to-last timeout. And so you don't want to have zero timeouts going in the final minute of the game because you might need to advance the ball. You might need to draw something up. And so Kerr was helpless to stop the run. And I know guys were gassed, but Kawhi, it felt to me like, oh my God, Kawhi, who had had a quiet game in his worst game of the finals through three quarters, was so alive and so in charge in that moment, I thought they'd give it another possession or two. But then, so for me, part of the story is a timeout Nick Nurse did call, and then also a timeout they didn't call. After Boogie gets the illegal screen call, you had a timeout. It's 15 seconds left. It is a possession to win the championship. It's one thing if it's off a miss and you want to go and run and take advantage of transition, but it's sideline out of bounds in the backcourt. You have an opportunity to call timeout, draw something up, let your players know the Warriors have a foul to give, which Iggy knew. It's one of the reasons Iggy could go trap Kawhi on that final possession. He was going up there, I think, to give that foul with 4 seconds left. They don't call timeout there. They don't call timeout when the play starts going haywire. Nick Nurse has been sensational this first year. I think those final 3 minutes are tough. I think it was a questionable timeout that he did call and then a head-scratching timeout that he didn't call to give them an opportunity to win their first NBA championship on one shot.
I do want to ask this before we move on. Yesterday, Nick, you talked about a paradigm shift in this series, that the Warriors needed something, whatever it was, whether it was real or if it was almost superficial, if you will, something that sort of shifted the momentum. Do you think the fact that you had the Splash Brothers out there hitting 23-pointers on the road when you saw what happened to Klay Thompson earlier in the series, could that on top of what the KD's injury, could all of that be enough, CC, to shift the momentum in this series?
No, Jenna. They don't have enough offense. They're still going to struggle. Them points KD gave them earlier, they needed every one of them. Boogie Cousins still a liability on defense. He ain't in no great mental state. He bounced back in yesterday's game, but we know the Boogie Cousins. Draymond, he's still not able to hit shots. Iggy, he's not looking any healthier. They don't have a bench. No, there was no galvanizing moment last night. Toronto has a huge advantage. They had two chances at home, and they're going back to Oracle where they just swept them in a two-game. So, no, Toronto is still a better basketball team. Last night, they got off to a fast start, and that's what propelled them. They won the quarter. They won the first quarter, all right? Toronto won the last quarter. The other two quarters, they split. It is still a dominance by Toronto when you look at it. Five games, Toronto is the better basketball team.
Today on Fox, all eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe as they lead the U.S. women's national team against Thailand. It's group play. Coverage begins at 2 Eastern. All matches of the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup will be live on Fox, FS1, and streaming on the Fox Sports app. And joining us now to break it all down is this guy, a little knows a little something about soccer, U.S. soccer legend, goalkeeper Tim Howard.
Good to
Tim,
see you.
Tim, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
As people tell us all the time, man, you look better in person. You're in great shape.
I appreciate that, yeah.
A very dapper
thanks for coming.
Trio
thank
here.
You.
All right, so Tim, set the table for us a little bit. What should we expect from the U.S. women's national team heading into the tournament?
Well, I'm expecting them to win the cup. I mean, I think everybody here is. They're betting underdogs. I think they got France at the top. But I think that our girls are going to enjoy that. You know, I think they believe that they're the best, and to be able to hopefully play France on their home soil would be something special.
We know a lot of the big names, excuse me, Nick, on our team. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're loaded. They're stacked.
Yep.
Carly Lloyd, one of the stars from last cup. She's a reserve. Yep. That lets you know the depth. Give me one name, though, because typically you get in a competition like this, you need someone that is kind of the catalyst for the energy. Who do you see that you would like to see play well, that you would know, okay, if they play well, that leads to USA playing well?
Well, it seems like all the women are a household name, right? So I won't be able to give you anybody you haven't heard of, but Julie Ertz, to me, is the engine of that team. She's the glue. For all the women who are the spectacular players and the goal scorers and they get all the headlines, Julie, for me, is the engine. She works tirelessly in the midfield. When you see her, she comes off her shorts or socks, her jersey's dirty, and she's done the tough work. And I think that ultimately pushes you over the edge when you have big tournaments.
What's the biggest difference between this Women's World Cup team and the team from the 2015 World Cup? Because I know a lot of our viewers, probably the last time they watched closely our women's national team was 4 years ago. What's the biggest difference?
Well, I think that our big players have gotten older. Naturally, you see that in a World Cup cycle, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, Carly Lloyd, who at one time was best player in the world, is what a great reserve to come off the bench. And so, you know, our big guns are a little bit older and wiser, and I genuinely think that experience will carry us.
You mentioned Carly Lloyd. How much are you expecting from her?
Well, it seems like every time I watch the women and she comes off the bench, it's like with her first one or two touches, she's creating something, whether it's a goal or an assist. And that helps you as a teammate, but when she's standing on the sideline getting ready to come in, the other team sees it as well, and they got tired legs. It's the 80th minute, and they're thinking, here we go again. So she's got goals in her. We know that, and the fresh legs help.
You guys were talking before the segment started. There's a lot of goalkeeper blood on that side of the table. Chris's daughter was a Division I goalkeeper at Florida State. You, obviously, were the best goalkeeper in U.S. national team history. The women are losing, I think, their best goalkeeper in U.S. national team history. The switch over there, Hope Solo is being replaced by Alyssa Nahar. Explain the pressure on her and what we can expect from her.
Alyssa's done well to come in because big, big shoes to fill. Brianna Scurry was the world's best, and Hope Solo was the world's best, so it's a long line. But I've seen her play with her club team. I've seen her play a bunch with the national team over the last couple of years. She's ready to make a splash on the stage. I think in order to win a World Cup, you have to have your goalkeeper playing lights out. And she has the ability to do that sometimes when you play on the women's national team. You don't always get the opportunity because they are so dominant. But she'll be able to earn her money in this tournament.
Give us a couple of other strong contenders to either root for or to watch or you know is going to be there in the end.
Well, the obvious ones are Germany and France, right? I watched Argentina yesterday have a massive 0-0 draw, but you could see the passion. They're rolling around on the ground afterwards, hugging each other because this was just such a massive
result. We do that after shows, so I just want to make sure we're on this. Okay, so that's a good thing.
It's a great thing.
Okay,
it's
cool. So Argentina.
Yeah, I like Argentina. You know, as a dark horse, they're not going to win the tournament. But again, their ability to stay compact behind the ball, hit the other teams on the break. For me, I thought it was exciting to watch, especially in these tournaments. As long as the underdog doesn't beat the U.S., I'm rooting for the underdog.
We don't know exactly how the draw is going to go because it depends on how you do in your group stage. But we could be looking at a matchup against France, not in the final, not in the semifinal, but in the round of 16 potentially. How much in a World Cup setting does home field matter? Does the fact that France is going to have the country on their side in that setting matter?
It's the biggest home field advantage ever, particularly when it's the World Cup, because an entire nation will just stop. And they'll root for their team outside the hotel, outside the restaurants, in the stadium. But again, I think our women are going to relish that. I think they got a chip on their shoulder for people not picking them to be the best. So to upset France in France doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, if you can't be at the World Cup, best city to watch a World Cup in is New York.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
These streets are crazy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank
World
you.
Class
Thank
act.
You so much. Will Alyssa Nair have as many saves in the whole tournament as you did in that game against Belgium?
I hope she doesn't have to do
right,
that.
Right, just getting effort. Great.
Tiger Woods returns to Pebble Beach, side of his most dominant major win. The U.S. Open begins this Thursday, 12:30 Eastern on FS1, and continues on Fox at 7:30 Eastern. Or watch it all on the Fox Sports app. Good sports this week.
Unbelievable.
Time for us to go viral. All right, so Kevin Durant suffered a devastating injury in Game 5 last night, with the Warriors fearing it could be a torn Achilles. And NBA Twitter reacted with Trae Young tweeting, "Major respect for KD wanting to rush back and try to help his team win a championship. Get back healthy, bro." Kevin Love added, "No, hate to see that." And Dwayne Wade tweeted, "Even with all the things Durant has done, this is the most feigned out I've been. He knew he wasn't right, but he wanted to be there for his brothers. That's sports. That's love."
Obviously, the whole NBA community is going to come to Kevin Durant's figurative bedside. Now, what you see in this picture there is Kyle Lowry telling some of the fans in Toronto,
"Stop,
zip it."
Yeah.
I don't think the fans knew the severity of the injury.
Did. And they changed their tune.
And they ended up cheering KD. Those are some of the best fans in the NBA. I was surprised that the immediate reaction was cheering for him falling down. But they obviously didn't know he popped his Achilles.
But if you watch the play, though, if the fans are into the game, when he strains his Achilles, pops his Achilles, it's a loose ball. Serge Ibaka's got a breakaway.
Right.
Then he gets fouled. He's shooting, so they're going to be cheering anyway. So now they're supposed to be so tuned in to stop cheering, to wonder what, no. It's they're at a game. They reacted naturally. Canadians are not that way. All right? If you had been somewhere in the United States, we could expect that. On the East Coast, we can expect that. But the Canadians, they're not that way.
Our backyard? Probably could expect
There's no
that.
Doubt.
Time for stories to start your morning. Big game for the Splash Brothers last night. They combined for 57 points, including two crucial three-pointers in the last minute and a half. Warriors beat the Raptors, saving their season 106-105 to force Game 6. Nick, how impressive were Steph Curry and Klay Thompson?
I mean, they were spectacular. They were, along with Durant, the entirety of the offense early. And then once Durant went out, they were basically the only offense late. And this game, it's going to be overshadowed by KD. But this was the first time in 30 years a team facing elimination in the NBA Finals has won a game by just 1 point. Last time it happened, the famous Kareem game with those two free throws against Detroit. So we never see an NBA Finals elimination game come down to the last moment the way this did, or we almost never. And they were the biggest part of the ending as well with those 9 straight points at the end.
Yeah, they were living and dying with the three as the team. They hit 20 of them. Steph and Klay shot 27 threes, so that was an emphasis, especially going into the game. Got hot early in the game, but they're the reason why they're able to continue this series. The Splash Brothers, again.
Were spectacular.
All right, moving on to Kawhi Leonard. He had 26 points, including 10 straight for the Raptors in the fourth that nearly sealed the Game 5 win. Chris, what did you make of Kawhi Leonard's night?
I thought Kawhi looked good, especially late. I thought early he struggled, turned the ball over, not having a great game, but great players. Can they put together a 12-minute quarter? And he was very good at the end. I didn't mind him not shooting the last pass. When you see a double team from Iggy coming, you got Klay on you. Also, you got Steph on that side. You have to be able to make the best play. Draw the defenders, kick it, and hope someone gets a better shot. So I thought Kawhi, especially, he redeemed, salvaged his game by that strong fourth quarter.
Yeah, Kawhi, through three quarters, was having the first bad game he's had in these playoffs since Game 2 of the Milwaukee series, which was, by the way, the last bad game Toronto had played. I thought he was going to be in the midst of, in that fourth quarter, an all-time moment that propelled them to a championship to put a capstone on his all-time playoff run. Obviously, the Warriors regained momentum, but I agree with you 1,000%. Kawhi made the right basketball play. When he saw the double team, it was smart by Iggy to send the double team to make someone else make the play.
They had the double team come from a different spot.
Yeah.
So Kawhi did the right thing. He was guarding Gasol in the middle. Then he came up through the middle to get on his right hand, and Klay was on his left hand. He did a good job by not eating up all the time on the clock, swinging the ball, giving their offense a chance to get a shot.
All right, finally, Warriors won Game 5, but it was bittersweet. After missing more than a month, Kevin Durant finally took the court last night, came out hot, scored 11 points before going down in the second quarter with what is believed to be a torn Achilles. After all the drama surrounding his return for this series, a devastating way for it to end for him. Here's Steph Curry talking about KD.
When you were on this level of greatness and everybody's kind of poking and prodding and trying to, you know, narrate your story and tell you who you are, who you should be, what decisions you should make constantly over and over and over again. It's part of, you know, what comes with this territory, but it's just when you get to know somebody and see how genuine they are and how committed they are just to playing basketball and having fun and living life a certain way. You root for those type of guys.
For him to put his health on the line, to come back and compete at the highest level, he's one of the best to ever do it. I want to try to win this for him. We miss him. We just hope him a speedy recovery. That's our brother. And it's honestly, to be honest, it's very deflating. It's hard to even celebrate this win.
I know it just happened last night, but if you can take a few steps forward, what do you think, Nick, this injury means for KD's future?
If we are assuming that the initial reports are accurate, that it's a ruptured Achilles tendon, everything is now in play and everything is now in flux. Kevin Durant is one of only a handful, and there might not be 5 guys in the NBA that this is true about, that could suffer this injury 10 days before free agency opens, or I guess 20 days before free agency opens, and still have any team with cap space offer him a max contract. He is one of a half dozen guys in the world who financially this won't necessarily damage him as far as what his next NBA contract's going to be. But he now has a real choice to make. We keep talking about Kevin Durant as a free agent, but he has the option to not be a free agent. He has a player option. He could opt into that and rehab with the Warriors on the Warriors' time with a team that, if he is on the quicker end of an Achilles recovery, he would be ready for the playoffs next season. Kobe tore his Achilles, missed 8 months. Rudy Gay missed 9 months. Boogie Cousins missed the full 12 months. But so if he's on a team that's going to make the playoffs without his contributions in the regular season, as we believe the Warriors would, he could opt in. And if his recovery goes the way he would hope, he'd be back in April of next year to contribute. He also could sign a max contract with the Knicks or the Clippers, anywhere he's thinking about Brooklyn, and rehab on their time and see if he can come back for them.
And their dime.
And their dime. Like, but it is, to me, him opting in to one more year with Golden State was 0%. And now it can no longer be 0%. I don't think it's the favorite. I still think he's likely coming to New York City. But the butterfly effect on what it means for the Knicks, what their plan is as far as building a contender instantly, whether they would want to, I'll tell you this much, if you're the Knicks and Kevin Durant still wants to go sign with you, the idea of trading for Anthony Davis so you guys have at least a year of them together, that goes out the window because Anthony Davis is an upcoming free agent after this year. I mean, this is a dramatic event, of course, for Kevin Durant, but for the entire landscape of the NBA.
It definitely changes free agency. I think the chances of him staying in Golden State just increased by a little bit. He doesn't gain anything by staying in Golden State. If he's going to stay there long term, sign a max deal with them long term, then yes, but that wasn't part of his intention. So even staying there, why would I stay there? He's always been uncomfortable in Golden State. He always says it. It's the Warriors and KD. These are his words. This is not stuff that I'm saying. This is not my opinion. This is stuff that he said. So in doing that, why would he opt in if he's not going to be there long term? Just to see the new building? No. Kevin Durant, when he wakes up this morning, he's going to be in a pursuit to get back on the basketball court and to get his basketball life back started. So that would be moving on to another team because it would help the free agent market and the players out there decide. If KD still decides to go to New York, what does Kawhi Leonard decide to do? Because that's a big decision for Kawhi now. Because him and KD matched up, Kawhi's like, wow, I'm going to miss him all during the regular season. Will he be back? The Anthony Davis thing to New York. I don't even believe that's a reality. So I just believe it's between Kevin Durant, he's going to go to the Knicks, or he's going to go to the Clippers. I don't believe the Brooklyn is a real thing. And I don't believe that changed last night because I was on the phone with an NBA executive last night. And regardless of whatever happens to Kevin Durant, regardless, they say it's a strain, rupture, regardless, they would take Kevin Durant.
Of course.
All right, Nick, just break down the timing a little bit for all of this. Because who is Kawhi waiting on KD's decision? Is KD going to wait? Where does Kyrie fit in? Like, just what's the timing on where everything breaks down?
Listen, I'd be lying to the public if I pretended I had any idea of what Kawhi is waiting on, what he wants. Chris has more insight on that than I do, but I don't think anyone really is in Kawhi's head on this. And I don't think Kawhi's in his own head on this. Kawhi is in pursuit of the greatest moment of his basketball life right now, and then we'll have not a lot of time, but about 2 weeks to figure the rest of it out. This is going to be about, for Kevin Durant, not just where he wants to play basketball next year, but where he wants to rehab. And that is why, I'm going to keep going back to what internal pressure, what whispers were there within the Warriors organization that he needs to get out there. Was it nothing? Was it anonymous assistant scout that was saying it? Or was it teammates? Was it a real executive, or was it the third tier assistant coach? Because if you're Kevin Durant and it was people that matter within the organization prodding you to play before you were fully ready, the idea that you would then want to spend a year around those same people, to me, dwindles to zero.
Right.
If that wasn't the case, then maybe you would want to stay there with a chance of recovering early and getting back to the playoffs next season and then having free agency all over again 12 months from now.
But there's not the crop of free agents in the 2020 class as there are this year.
Correct.
So why would I stay in Golden State, rehab with these guys where everything is already uncomfortable if there were rumors and everything? I don't believe that. I believe that wouldn't have changed Kevin Durant. He would have pushed himself to get out there on the court. But the catch of free agents next year is not anything like it is this year.
All right, let's move on to Kawhi Leonard now. He did have a good game last night despite the loss, 12 of his 26 points in the fourth quarter, but couldn't get a final shot as time ran out, opting to pass to Kyle Lowry instead. So Warriors win it, 106-105. Game 6 now on Thursday back in Oakland. Here's Kawhi Leonard on that final sequence.
Well, I mean, two guys came up on me. I don't know if I could have got a shot off. It's hard. I mean, if you got two guys on top of you, you have to try to find the right play. We end up getting a shot in a corner, but it just didn't go off quick enough.
All right, see, why couldn't the Raptors close this one out last night?
I mean, they couldn't get a bucket. Their offensive possessions outside of Kawhi were not very, very good. Kyle Lowry in a pick-and-roll attempt late in the shot clock, people will let that possession go. He throws the ball, and they get a backcourt violation. They don't even get a shot attempt. I believe that they were not as focused on the defensive end. They let a couple sets of Golden State, one of their favorite sets that they run, got Steph a wide open, and Van Vliet was trailing him. That shouldn't have happened at that point in the game. So this is a game that the opposition made 12 more threes. Now, in any NBA game, especially against the Warriors, to think that you might have the ball and a chance to win,
it's impossible.
Yes.
I mean, like the Warriors were plus 36 from the three-point line, and the Raptors had the ball down one with a chance to win.
And, and because we tend to forget, because they had the six-point lead, and we forgot they were behind the whole game.
The whole game.
We act like, now, we would have a case if they had scored 30-something that first quarter, had Golden State on the ropes, winning at halftime, maintained that in the third, had a six-point lead late in the fourth, but that wasn't the case. We tend to forget they fought to get all the way back into the game. Then it becomes possession by possession. Can I get a stop, and can I run my offensive set and get a good look? And that's where they weren't able to do at the end.
So two things quickly here. After that Nick Nurse timeout with 3:05 left, the Warriors outscore him 9-2. The Raptors' offensive possessions were a Kawhi air ball, a Lowry missed three, the Lowry backcourt that you mentioned, a Kawhi missed three, and then they got a basket on a Boogie Cousins goaltend. That was their only made field goal attempt. The Warriors, obviously, in that stretch, hit three threes and almost had another basket, the Boogie tip-in that was this close, minute 59, this close to counting. And so they went cold. The Warriors, the Splash Brothers, the original architects of this along with Draymond, they did what they do to stave off elimination. But on that final possession, I know folks on television today are going to say, you know what? Kobe would have shot it. And they're right. And that's why Kobe in those situations is 6 of 23.
I don't think there'll be NBA players saying that. I think it'll be all the people who don't have any experience saying that.
Regardless of that, the point that I'm making is we glorify the guts it takes to take that shot, even if it's the wrong play. That Kawhi had two guys on him, two outstanding defenders on him, four arms. He made the right play. It's not like his teammates have been letting him down throughout this postseason. He swung it to Van Vliet, who swung it to Lowry, who it looked like had an open corner three. And Draymond Green, a defensive player of the year in this league, came over and got two fingertips on it. And so we don't know what would have happened. You cannot crush Kawhi Leonard for not trying to be a hero there. Now, if he would have tried to be a hero and he somehow makes it, it's one of the most epic moments in the history of the NBA. He turned down the chance at that glory to make the right basketball play. You want to criticize Kawhi for the first three quarters? Fair game. But to criticize him for not taking a bad, dumb shot, I think it shows a lack of understanding of how you win championships in this league.
Back here, first things first, eight-time NBA All-Star Dwight Howard joins the show. Dwight, thanks for being with us
thanks
this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. We had to bring in a baller, man. I'm tired of him yelling at me and everything. I'm so sick. Not sick of Jenna, but I needed a professional opinion with the finals game like we had last night.
All right. Well, we got a baller here, so let's do it. Dwight, we start with last night's terrible news. Despite getting a win to stave off elimination, the Warriors lost Kevin Durant again. KD reportedly believed to have torn his Achilles in the second quarter. The Warriors rallied, went on to beat Toronto 106-105 to force a game six. But let's start with the news of Kevin Durant. Dwight, how devastating was this last night?
Oh, man, I think it's very devastating. KD is means a lot to a lot of basketball players, a lot of fans around the world. And just watching him go down was very sad. And I've been knowing KD since he was in high school. I actually met him at an NBA camp in high school, and I sat down with him. I said, yo, you got a chance to be one of the best NBA players ever. So I'm really happy for his success, but it hurts to see him go down like this.
Were you surprised when you saw him out there last night? Did you think he would be back sooner or not at all in this series?
I wasn't surprised. You know, this is for the championship, you know, and he wants to win, and you know, as an athlete, you want to get out there and play, even though you might not be 100%. You want to show the world, you want to show everybody, like, hey, I can play, and I want to come back and help this team win.
I think there's only a few players that can potentially relate to Kevin Durant. You talked about you guys in high school, your ascended, man, mm-hmm. the accolades you had early, both of you, in the mm-hmm. same breath. With the lack of respect, KD, same for yourself. You mm-hmm. could see him so forcing out there, but I'm going to go to the team. Do you put the team at fault for forcing him, or are you just saying, as an athlete, I'm trying to get out there with my teammates?
Man, well, we don't know the inside of the situation, but, you know, as an athlete, you know, you want to play. You know, it's the finals. Your team is down 3-1. You're the best player in the world. You got to go out there and try to play. That's what everybody wants, you know. So I think sometimes you got to be selfish and say, hey, I'm not ready. And that's the hard part, because you want to get out there and show everybody that you can play, because it's like, if you don't, you got the whole world like, why didn't you play? You
okay, know, so now I can look back on it. Mm-hmm. He's gotten cleared. Mm-hmm. He didn't make it through a regulation NBA practice. Do you right. see yourself ever being put in the competition like that? Because there's a protocol. Mm-hmm. You're going to be doing physical therapy. You'll be cleared mm-hmm. for contact. You get on the court. And then after you get on the court, you determine, hey, if after that 24 hours, did it flare up? You know, did I have any worse problems? That right there, I think, becomes a tricky situation. What would you have done in that situation?
Man, I would have tried to play. But yes. I don't think that's the right decision. I tried it this year. I had some early problems throughout the season to where, you know, I couldn't even put my shoes on before the game. So guys had to help me with that. You know, it was hard to sleep. It was hard to get on the train, the plane, whatever we had to do to travel. But I just wanted to play and be there for my teammates. So at this point, you got to be selfish for your career, because it should be about you.
And you were obviously at this point, and this with no disrespect at all, we were talking before the show how much I respect what you've done over the course of your career, mm-hmm. at a different place in your career than KD is right now.
Correct.
But we can go back to when you were in a similar place KD is in, which is when you got moved to the Lakers and the mm-hmm. expectations, you and mm-hmm. Kobe and Nash, and it was, mm-hmm. and that year to me was the start of people denigrating you as a player because you played through an injury. You correct. People forget.
Yeah, I don't. Two of them.
Right. You had a torn up shoulder.
Torn labrum.
Torn yeah. labrum. Mm-hmm. And I think you led the league in rebounding anyway, mm-hmm. but you weren't as dominant as people had grown accustomed to seeing. And so people don't, you're out there, they don't care if you're injured. How much for you was there the internal pressure, but how much of it was external, even if it's not from teammates, but correct. From seeing people on shows like this or reading the LA Times, whatever it is, mm-hmm. why isn't Dwight Howard doing more? Why isn't Dwight Howard out there? And how does that affect your decision to play or to shut yourself down when you're dealing with two torn labrums or, in KD's case, a torn up calf muscle?
Well, I think the best thing you could do is really just look out for yourself. You can't worry about what everybody else is saying, and that's really hard. Because as an athlete, you want to get out there and play. You want to prove and show to everybody that, you know, hey, despite this injury that I have, I can still play through it. But you also have that risk of never playing again. And I remember the first time I hurt my back, and the doctor saying I would never play again. So for me, I was like, man, why did I do this? And so you want to make mm-hmm. sure you do what's best for you at all times, even though it could hurt, even though it could mess you up in the future. You know, you want to do what's best for you, and that's all you can ask for.
All right, let's get back to the game last night. Mm-hmm. You have KD's injury in the second quarter. You have the Warriors now, who were on the brink of elimination, somehow mm-hmm. on the road, come out, and you see what Klay and Steph were able to do. Was last night more about what the Warriors did, or was it what the Raptors could not do?
Well, I don't think the Raptors played a good game. Right. I think they missed a lot of shots, and I think they got caught up in the moment of, hey, if we
here
win
we
this
are.
Game,
yeah.
we're champions. And you could tell every shot they had, it was like, man, they were nervous. So I think they're going to go back and just really handle business for the next game.
With you the think the Raptors are going to go back and handle business for the next game?
I do. I think they're the better team in this series. If you look at the roster that they have, it's guys who have fallen to the Warriors before, but they have experience against them. You know, you look at Serge when he played with OKC. Mm-hmm. You look at Gasol in Memphis. They've had some success mm-hmm. against Golden State. And then you look at Kawhi and Danny Green. So you got three teams combined with one now who have that experience of playing against a team like Golden State on how to beat them. And they've actually done a really good job. And I think the newer version of Draymond Green and Siakam has had an amazing year. And everything that team has done, you know, this season, I think they deserve, you know, a championship for all their hard work.
Toronto's led by one player. That's Kawhi Leonard. Describe to us, as basketball fans, what we're seeing on the biggest stage, what we've seen in the finals from him.
Man, he's doing some amazing things. I never really had a chance to play against Kawhi away from Tim Duncan, Manu, and all those guys. So it was pretty hard to judge him playing against him at that point. But now he's doing everything. He's all over the place. And he's efficient. And I really like how he plays. He's hardworking, and it's like he doesn't have a smile or frown, and he's just the same way the whole game. So I think Tim Duncan is rubbed off on him. So is Pops, and he's doing an amazing job, and I'm really happy for him.
You mentioned that when you were in high school, or when KD was in high school, you had just gotten to the league. Kevin Durant, by high school, people were saying, this guy could be an all-time great.
Oh, yeah.
You, straight out of high school, number one pick of the draft. We talk about LeBron, the other great players in this league. Then there's Kawhi, who's the 15th pick from a smaller school. And even when you played against him in that era, he was a great defensive player. No one saw this coming.
Correct.
What do you make of his progression as a player? And in your experience around the league, how rare is it for a guy who was never projected to be league MVP in the discussion for best player in the world to work his way into that category?
Well, I think the league is all about opportunity and system. And the first couple of years he had in San Antonio playing behind, you know, Tim Duncan and Manu and Tony Parker and those guys, he didn't have a chance to really be that guy. You know, so he's learning from all these guys. I think he took parts of each and every one of those guys' games to become the player that he is today. So now that he has an opportunity to be on the biggest level, and he is in the right system, he has the right pieces behind him, and he's just showing the world his hard work. You know, if you ask anybody around the league, Kawhi's one of those guys that really works hard in the gym. He's a machine. And those days in the gym that nobody sees, they pay off. And even, you know, coming in after practice, getting shots up, all the little things that you have to do to take care of your body, you can see he's doing it, and that's why he's so successful.
So where do you think he's going to be successful next year?
To me, I think he should stay in Toronto.
Why?
Because he took the team to the finals, you know. So if he win, why would he go anywhere else? I think he'll be able to live in Toronto forever and not have to ever spend a dime. I think he could move his whole family to Toronto and live there for the rest of his life.
Get the keys to the city.
I respect that. And a guy that's moved around, when you look back on history, what should KD do? And does that decision change because of the injury last night?
I think it does change because of the injury. And I heard what you said earlier, but Achilles injury is very big, you know. And
is that the word? When you're training or when you're talking to NBA players, is that the fear? NFL players, especially a wide receiver, man, you go across that middle, man, my ACL can be, man, my hamstring, all that. Man, don't mess with my neck because I don't want to play football with the fear of my neck. Is it the Achilles in basketball?
Achilles in the back. Those are the two hardest injuries that, well, I mean, you can't really say every injury is bad.
Right.
But, you know, if you have an Achilles
injury. If you have an 18, you get some injuries on your feet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's really bad, you know. So for him, man, he just has to get healthy right now. I think that's the only thing that he should be concerned with is making sure he gets healthy. And I know free agency is coming up. But you don't want to stress yourself out right now. You really have to focus on how can I get healthy and not rush it because it could be tough.
Okay, you were real quick to tell us where Kawhi should play next year. Let me throw a name out there. I'll throw three names out there real quick, top of your head. Where does Kyrie play next year?
Ooh-wee. He might go back with LeBron.
Ooh-wee's not a spot.
I was like, and it wasn't too quick either.
I was going to say the Lakers or
Lakers
New York.
Lakers
in New York.
Okay. And you have Kawhi staying in Toronto. KD is where?
KD oh man, why are you doing this to me,
Because you were alluding to this.
You were you. We ended up talking about the Achilles and the importance of this, but you were halfway through an answer on. You said that the injury could affect his free agency decision. Can you expand on, like, KD? You thought was directed where, and now with the injury, might be directed where?
Well, only because, you know, when you have the injury, it takes a season almost to heal. You know, so you don't want to, like. I don't think a team would want to wait for KD to get healthy for the playoffs because you don't know what's going to happen while he's in the playoffs. So that's going to be a risk for any team. As great as a player as KD is, you want a healthy KD. And I just want nothing but the best for him. And any team he go to, I'll be root for him.
What do you think Anthony Davis went through this year?
Last name.
And oh, apologies.
Yeah, that's
but,
okay.
Well, he doesn't have the decision. It's
no,
not about
I
where he's going to go.
No, but I didn't know where he thought he was going to end
up. But what do you think Anthony Davis went through this season? You're, as a guy that once upon a time, after being drafted by a team, said, you know what? And you had more success in Orlando, a hell of a lot more than Anthony Davis had in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And you still said, you know what? This isn't it for me anymore. And you got criticized for that. Anthony Davis, who had never been criticized seemingly for anything, essentially demands a trade, and all of a sudden people are coming for him. What do you think that was like this year, and how do you think that ends up?
I think it was hard for him as a player because it has nothing to do with the team or the city. Like, the players are
but
the
they take it that way.
They take it that way. Like,
yes.
Why he want to leave us? You know, I think it's a business decision that he wants to do for himself and his family, and I think that's the only thing that should really matter, and it's not saying, hey, we don't like our fans or anything like that, but we have to make the best decision for our basketball life and career. And he has some amazing years in New Orleans, and I don't think anybody should say, oh, why is he doing us like this when he's giving New Orleans hope. He's taking them places that, you know, they haven't been since Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. And I think he deserved credit for that and not being punished for saying he wants to leave. You know, everybody has their reason for leaving. And it's just like if somebody decides to go from Walmart to Target, you know, who has a regular job, you know, you can do what you want to do with your life. But he's going to do what's best for him. And the team is going to do what's best for them. So.
Well, that's a good segue because now I want to talk about the Lakers, and they've been playing like Walmart. But do you think the draw, and I've been a Lakers fan since I was a kid. My brother got drafted there when I was in the ninth grade, so I know the lure of the – yeah.
Ninth grade?
Yeah,
ninth grade. No, when he was in the ninth grade.
I know.
Grade,
I was like in the 70s.
It's 1980. Yeah, I'm willing to put my family's track record up against anyone else, but that's not the subject here. Mm-hmm. Is the Lakers still the draw on players the way it has always been? Mm-hmm. All right, and you're a player in the league, and you're a player that played for the Lakers.
Correct. I don't know if they're the draw anymore. I think now guys understand that it doesn't really matter where you play. The era that we live in, the social media age, you can play anywhere and get attention. And I think a lot of guys want to win championships for their prospective cities, you know, so they can say, I was the first to do it here instead of going along with doing it where everybody's already done it. So I don't think they have that same, you know, like, ah.
I have two quick ones for you. One is, do you think LeBron is a draw? For people to go play with LeBron. You competed against him in the East throughout the beginning of your
career. I think
guys
do want to play with him only because he's going to really elevate, you know, it depends on who the player is and the style they play. He can really elevate them to the next level.
And last one, I'm going to do a right turn here. I was going to talk about how historically underrated you are, but everyone that has a brain knows it. Top 50 all-time player, first ballot Hall of Famer. Instead, I want to talk about your idea that I can't believe you didn't want to ask him about. Our guy Chris Carter has been promoting this idea. You're a slam dunk champion, one of the greatest slam dunk competitions. Mm-hmm. Slam dunk competitions kind of lost some luster as of late. Mm-hmm. What do you think of this? You have on one side of the court the best dunkers in the NBA. The other side of the court, the best dunkers who ain't in the NBA. We don't know where they are. Street ballers, YouTube legends. Maybe
if we have to post bail to get a couple of them
exactly
out,
right.
We will do it. Sam Quinton.
I think those guys might win.
Right. Well, so you have a bracket. So you have a bracket.
Only because they're I don't want to say they're just dunkers, but that's what they do for a living. So for us, you know, we have season and all that stuff, and by the time we get to the dunk contest, we don't have no legs. Those guys are fresh because this is
So if you did that,
it seems like you're already making up an excuse.
No,
some dude coming off the street taking your cash.
But they,
that's what
but
it seemed like, bro.
I don't want to say they can win.
Right? Yeah,
I'm agreeing with you.
So
yeah,
let's call it $1 million cash at center court.
Dang.
Winner,
you're in. You back in the slam dunk? Yeah, you back in it?
You know what? I actually thought about it last year, getting back in the dunk contest. I still had some dunks that I wanted to do for the dunk contest. So.
Okay, you know, I like it.
I done slimmed down.
Slimmed down.
I'm getting my legs right. I might make a return for the dunk contest.
God knows you don't need an extra million to put with the rest of that money. Good Lord.
Thank you so much.
God bless
you.
Check it. To get it cash.
Back to game 5. Last night, Warriors-Raptors' Kevin Durant made his return, but it was short-lived. Second quarter, after scoring 11 points, pulls up with what is reportedly believed to be a torn Achilles. He left the court. He left the arena on crutches. So how did the Warriors do without him? Let's get back to the game. Find out. Less than a minute and a half to go. Warriors down 3. Steph Curry to tie. 3 of his 31 on the night. Next possession, Klay Thompson finishes the nice ball movement. From deep, he finished with 26. Let's take you to the final possession now. Warriors up 1. Kawhi Leonard giving up the ball. It ends up over in the corner with Kyle Lowry, and he cannot get it to go. Warriors survive 106-105. They still trail in the series 3-2. All right, Nick, lots to get to in this one. How did the Warriors overcome Kevin Durant's injury to win this game?
Well, to me, it's a tale of two stories. One is in the first 42 minutes, and the other's in the final 6. Durant obviously was the best player on the court, looked like, in those opening 14 minutes. He played 12 of them. He was 3 of 3 from 3. And the Warriors are in control of the game, he goes down. And all of a sudden, Boogie Cousins, who was told he's going to get the first of his career, a DNP coach's decision, he's pressed into action. And it didn't look like game 3 or game 4 Boogie. He looked much more like game 2 Boogie and gave them much needed offense and a much needed lift. And Steph and Klay, who were really good from the opening tip, then understood it is now going to fall all on us. They combined in this game for 57 points, and the Warriors are in control for the first 3.5 quarters. And then Kawhi Leonard took over. Kawhi Leonard, who was having the worst game he's had in these playoffs since game 2 against Milwaukee. Not coincidentally, since then, the Raptors had won 7 of 8. He had been totally sensational. He was having a bad game. And then he scored 12 fourth quarter points, including 10 points in a row, to where the Raptors, who had trailed for 41 of the first 42 minutes, took the lead. And then the final 3 minutes, Nick Nurse calls a timeout. The Raptors go cold. Steph and Klay make you remind you of 2015-2016 of Splash Brothers going back and forth, backbreaking threes. And all of a sudden, the Raptors find themselves on the brink after, I think the whole world thought, see, when Kawhi went on that run, the Raptors were going to win this game. That the Warriors' dam had broken and that the Warriors, who didn't, they only had one timeout, so they weren't able to stop the run themselves, and the crowd was out of its mind, that the Raptors were getting ready to win their first championship. And then that final 3 minutes, the game totally flipped for a second time with that 9-2 run. The only basket the Raptors made was a goaltending call on Boogie Cousins. And now all of a sudden, we're a game away from a real series unfolding for us in these NBA Finals.
Yeah, the Raptors' inability to be able to shoot hit wide open shots. Anytime they've struggled in this series, why? They can't hit wide open shots. So it's not the Warriors' total defense. It's the inability for the Raptors to be able to make shots. That was the number one reason they were able to overcome the deficit of Kevin Durant and the emotion of it, because Toronto had every look that they wanted. I said when they lost game number 2, and they're getting every shot that they want, even when they struggled offensively, Danny Green, he's getting every shot that he wants. They couldn't hit shots early. And then later in the game, it becomes the Warriors, something they did that was really special outside of hitting the 23s that they hit. I don't know an NBA team that's going to ever be able to beat the Warriors if they make 23s. NBA Finals, a difference of 12 more made threes, the second most in NBA Finals history. But their ability to take advantage of offensive rebounds and getting second chance points. They had 6 offensive rebounds that generated a ridiculous number of 19 points off only 6 offensive rebounds. When you're able to get that type of shooting and you're able to get those types of second chances, this Warriors team at the end, They locked him up for one possession. Great substitution by Steve Kerr. Put Sean Livingston in. Takes out Boogie Cousins. So when Kawhi, when they double him, he swings it to Van Fleet. He has a 6'7", 6'8 guard on him. So he decided not to take that shot. He swings it to Kyle Lowry. And because they put Draymond in the free safety position on the defense, where he was playing Gasol and playing Lowry in the corner, Draymond is able to get his 6'9 body to the corner, guard these two players, and able to get the deflection. So I said a lot, but the Golden State Warriors, listen, they won this by one point. So it's one possession, one missed shot, but they took advantage of shooting the three and the second chance points.
Nick, did last night change your perspective at all on where this series is going?
I think the Raptors are the better team. I think they've shown it over five games, but the Warriors will be favorites in game six. I don't know. I want to see obviously Kevin Durant's going to be out. I want to think more about game number six before I say who I think is going to win.
But talked about all week a shift in paradigm, right? You talked about something that could maybe turn this around. Could the fact that Klay and Steph played so well on the road, could that be, or playing off KD's injury?
Is a shift in the paradigm, I think it's more likely if the Warriors are going to come back and not only force a game seven but win the championship. The shift in paradigm to me wouldn't have been Kevin Durant coming back from the injury, but how the Raptors recover from being this close to a championship, from having a 6-point lead with 3 minutes left to where, and in those last, Nick Nurse also got to recover. Nick Nurse did Steve Kerr a favor calling that timeout to stop his own run with 3 minutes left, and then did Kerr another favor by not calling a timeout after Boogie Cousins committed that illegal screen. The Warriors, because it's out of bounds, the Warriors are going to be able to sub anyway. They're going to be able to put out their lineup they want anyway. You call a timeout. You bring the ball to the front court. You draw up the best play you've ever had to win a championship. Those are your options. I think he made the wrong call in both spots. Is that a little Monday morning quarterbacking? On the final possession, maybe. On the first one, in real time, I think people were surprised he stopped his own run with the timeout when Kirk couldn't have stopped it himself. And so how do they recover from being that close to a title and now having to go to Oracle to play game six?
I'm going to push back on two things. Nick Nurse had his best play called. Nick Nurse said they stopped going pick and roll at Kawhi Leonard because they were jumping and double teaming Kawhi. So they started going to a 1-4 set. That's the set where Kawhi was going one-on-one. Iggy forced them out of that by coming out of the zone that he was playing to be able to attack Kawhi. So he was in the best play. That was the best play that they've run this series. Kawhi, y'all move out the way and let me work. I don't need a pick. I don't need any help getting open. But because the double team came, they took that away. From an NBA, last season they changed the rules. So a lot of NBA coaches in Nick Nurse's position, they would have called timeout. They changed the rule last year. Under 3 minutes, you only get two timeouts. At that time, they had four timeouts. He saw his team was exhausted. Kyle Lowry even kind of motioned to him that he wanted a timeout. So I could understand. I'll give him that. And the reason why we're criticizing because the momentum stopped. All right? Nick Nurse did what a lot of coaches would do. He called one so he wouldn't waste them.
And the last point on this, I know all day long people are going to say, should Kawhi have taken that shot?
Right.
No. Not when you're double-teamed by Andre Iguodala. People glorify, Kobe would have taken that shot. Okay, maybe. But there's a reason why Kobe is 6 of 23 on those shots. A shooting percentage right over 25%. Because he took a lot of terrible ones. We glorify guts over smarts far too often in sports. Kawhi Leonard had a chance to have arguably the single greatest moment in NBA history. We've never had a buzzer beater to win a championship. And he turned it down because it was the smart play. It didn't work out, but it was the right play for the Raptors.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.